This season, the Tottenham Way is sponsored by Harry's, and Harry's are the US shaving company hoping to make a big impact in the UK. And if you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, you can get your trial set for £3.95. That is usually worth £11.95. For that £3.95, you will get some shaving foam, a razor with five blades, a travel cover, and a handle in a colour of your choice. My handle is orange, Dan. What colour is yours?
It's quite racy. Mine's grey.
Grey. That's a bit bleak, but there is another third colour available. We don't know what that is, but do check it out. Go to harrys.com/Tottenham. Get your trial set for £3.95. Dan and I have both got it, and we both love it because it gives you the choice of when you would like to receive your blades. Thanks very much for listening, and enjoy the pod. We have a lot of complaints about people eating crisps, and Harry Bowl's just going to be even worse.
Alright.
I'm starting. That's my start. That's my intro. How are you, Dan?
I'm very well, thank you, Tom.
Good. We're joined this week back by unpopular demand, I'd say. Dan's friend George Bagali. How are you?
I'm good. Honoured to be back on the podcast.
You should be honoured, because it didn't go down too well first time round, did it?
The only reason he's back on is because it was a draw. I made it clear to him that if Liverpool won, he would be too smug. If Spurs won, he would be too bitter and take all the credit away from Tottenham. So it works out well for you.
I was with Dan on Saturday and I was out. I wasn't in. I wasn't on the lineup at all. So something's changed.
Well, the draw. The fact that it was a draw and an entertaining game, I thought, okay,
ratings.
We'll get you back on.
For ratings.
Yeah, numbers. It's all about numbers, mate. Yeah, interesting to see how it all goes down. But we're also joined this week by Connor Mummery. Hello, how are you, Connor?
Very well, Tom.
Thank you. Yeah, very well, thank you. Thank you for coming down and joining us. Connor Mummery of Twitter, but also of Mirror Football. What exactly do you do at Mirror Football?
So I'm the social editor. I basically run the Facebook channels.
Okay.
Unlike, you know, websites like The Mail and The Independent, Mirror heavily reliant on their social traffic. It's not really a destination website.
Are you
the likes of Mail on Sport, so.
Are you kind of head of banter for it?
No. I do take a bit of a back step from that. that's people's biggest problem with Mirror Football. I'm quite aware of that. I mean, I didn't used to be a fan of it. The first thing I did in this job was unblock myself from Mirror Football.
Oh, nice.
Twitter account. I can't remember why, though. Like, obviously, I didn't bring
as in, they've blocked you?
Yes. I was blocked by Mirror Football.
Wow.
And I've also, since I've taken over, had quite a lot of friends and stuff saying, can you unblock me?
Oh, right.
So I think they had some sort of trigger happy person.
I can't imagine the Mirror being that block happy, really. They must get all sorts of. Yeah. I mean, all of them
are quite
banter,
isn't it? They're the ones that do the player names. They'll have like nicknames or code names for it. Yeah.
Is it Mirror Football that does Gary Monk as Thomas Turgis every single time? Yeah. Still funny.
That's good. That's something we've got spot on.
I still enjoy that. Yeah.
I do as well, even when I do it.
No, welcome both of you. We're going to crack straight on because I think we want to hear what everyone's got to say about a controversial but entertaining draw at Anfield on Sunday. Liverpool feeling quite aggrieved, let's say. So let's start with you, George, and let's start with the penalty decisions.
Yeah, at the end of after my emotions had calmed down in the pub, my first thought was of this exact moment of being asked on the podcast about the penalties. And at the time, I thought it was going to be really easy. I thought they were both penalties at the end of the game. It was only having seen the replays on Match of the Day and looking at some of the analysis that was obviously it's been all over the place since that I actually, as unbiased as possible, think neither were penalties.
that is exactly what I wanted. I'm happy that's happened.
I'll clarify both.
I was going to say, yeah.
Second one's very easy.
Okay.
The first one is, I think Harry Kane actually deceived the referee. I don't think there was enough contact for him to go down. I think it's anyone who's kind of got a clear head. I know Spurs fans are quite protective of Harry Kane, and I know what it's like to be very defensive of your kind of best player, but you watch the replay, I think at max his toe touches Karius's shirt. There's not, no one can say there's enough contact for him to go down. In short, he deceived the referee. And then the second one, I think Van Dijk did foul Lamella, but if you look at the replays, and this is so hard for the referee and the linesman, but Lamella's actually fractionally offside when Llorente heads the ball, so that shouldn't have been a penalty either.
Okay.
I think the Kane one, I think that's something, that's an art that Luis Suarez perfected at Liverpool, that going over the keeper, exactly like that, with minimal contact, admittedly. But at the end of the day, it's penalty, going by the laws. And I think Liverpool fans had nothing wrong with that mentality when it was one of their own doing it.
No, but I'd still admit afterwards that Suarez had conned the referee. I wouldn't be crying about
it. I know where you're coming from, but I don't think conning or diving is the right word. I think Kane actually said it himself, which is that if you're a player and you know contact's coming and you feel contact, you go down. And I think both Lamella and Kane did that. They were fouled in both instances, and in both instances they went down theatrically or fully. But why not? If you get kicked from behind in the box in the last minute of a game, you're 2-1 down. You've got to go down. There's no point in staying.
I think Lamella was hard, don't I? Sometimes a lot of highlights, a lot of replays make it look worse than it is. I think some of them do the exact opposite. And sometimes when you see someone just get like booted, it doesn't look that bad on the replay. But anyone who's had it when they play football, if you get kicked in the, like a fleshy part of your leg, it really hurts.
Yeah, and I accept that Van Dijk tried to pull out.
Yeah,
but he also still made
contact. So I think
he
was trying to clear it.
It almost seems as if this is not being accepted by a corner of Liverpool fans, because it wasn't a tackle that he was trying to do. He's trying to clear it.
Yeah, yeah.
And Lamella's got his body.
Yeah, it's a good play. He's
booted him. He's booted him up the arse, really.
It's a good attacking play. I think Van Dijk's realised that he couldn't get his leg out of the way in time. So no, I think that's fine. It's the offside, the second one. But again, it's difficult. I think another way of phrasing it is that for the information available to the officials at the time, I think you couldn't criticise them, because I think Kane's, from the first view, it looked like a penalty. I thought it was a penalty. And they gave it, and they got the offside part of it right for that one. And then I think for the second one, it's so hard to see that Lamella's like left foot was offside.
Well, Salah was also offside for the second goal, wasn't he?
Yeah.
By a fraction.
Yeah.
There was so much controversy, and I think with the Kane issue, it was obviously more about whether he was on or off than whether there was contact with Karius. Because I think even Karius has come out and said, I might have made contact, which means I did make contact.
I don't know the exact wording of the rules. It's just whether, I'm not sure if
Whether Lovren deliberately...
I think contact alone doesn't necessarily mean it's a penalty. I think is it to do with impeding or putting the striker at disadvantage of retrieving the ball. I don't think Harry Kane was at any additional disadvantage
by Kane, that contact. It's a tricky one, because you don't want to be thinking about who it is. You just want to be thinking about what happened. I don't think Kane is going to squander a chance to score if he can score. And I think he has been impeded.
It gets more complex than that, because I think he might have been expecting to get clattered, but Karius actually ends up going underneath. Harry Kane's obviously mid-stride, and Karius ends up going underneath his right leg, and the turn, Harry Kane's dragging his foot, and it just catches his shirt. Kane might have been expecting to get clattered, and it never came, and he's already on his way down.
That's me. I mean, I think the interesting thing is that the Referees Association statement that they've released just about an hour ago, right?
Yeah.
And they kind of clarified the offside decision, which was that if Lovren deliberately played the ball, which means he intended to kick it, basically, and it's come off him, regardless of where Kane's standing, then it is onside.
Yeah.
So by the letter of the law, that was the right decision. And there's been a lot of weird stuff flying around. Like Clattenburg did a column for the Times this morning and said they got it wrong. But actually, by the letter of the law, Kane is onside. I think it was muddied by that Match of the Day transcript and Moss apparently asking Martin Atkinson to have a look on telly, which apparently Martin Atkinson never did and didn't have access to TV, which was all really weird. Yeah. Martin Atkinson was a fourth official. But I think, you know, first of all, I really like the fact that, first of all, Moss consulted with the linesman for the first penalty, and I really like the fact that the linesman overruled him. It said to me that there were officials doing due diligence, doing their job properly, and not making rash decisions or being influenced by the situation or the pressure or the fact that it was in front of the cop. So I quite liked, obviously, you know, I'm pro Spurs, but I quite like both instances, how they played out.
That's quite underplayed, actually. We got two penalties in the last 5 minutes at the cop end of Anfield. Yeah. Amongst everything else, how mental is that?
Yeah, and the lino made a great call. Fair enough, it was fractionally offside, but I think everyone, you know, even some Liverpool fans, have kind of forgiven him for that, because it was literally Lamella's toe. And the fact that he's overruled Moss, who very visibly kind of waved the whole thing away, as Pochettino said afterwards, was a brave decision, and I think it was a good decision, not considering the offside.
I think something that not a lot of people have picked up With the first penalty is the encroachment of Emre Can and Van Dijk, who eventually stopped Lamela getting a get at it on the rebound.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're going to be panicky.
Panicky.
That's the issue, though, isn't it? We could sit here, you can look at every single marginal decision and, you know, say Salah's offside. It kind of, the drama was all part of it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it made for one of the games of the season, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Big time.
And, and it's almost a shame because we've done it ourselves. They did it on Match of the Day. It's been all over the internet today. And it's kind of detracted from what I thought was a really good Spurs second half performance
and it's also
at Anfield, which does not often happen.
Mm. Also detracted from one of the goals of the season from Wanyama as well.
Two goals this season.
And actually, they deserved more credit for two incredible goals.
Wanyama's goal was amazing.
It was.
Yeah. It gets better every single
time. Unbelievable.
There's a video going around on Twitter of Wanyama's goal from the Liverpool fans. Yeah, it's a reverse angle. It's really funny because Karius punches it out and Liverpool kind of assume it's safe, if you like, and the fans are going a little bit mad at Karius, and you've got this one guy that goes, "Catch the bloody thing," but he says it just as Wanyama smashes it past Karius, so it's kind of timed awfully for him.
It kind of reminded me of the Danny Rose against Arsenal goal.
Mm.
Just in that it was a goalkeeper who should have caught it, but then you thought, okay, the danger's clear here. And it kind of seemed to simmer down, and suddenly this thunderbath just comes from nowhere. I know they weren't that similar, but
yeah, no,
it was the same kind of situation.
I saw on Twitter there was a Tottenham fan, I think it was Spurs Statman.
Mm.
He tweeted yesterday, obviously as a joke, that Wanyama's goal was clocked at something like 230 miles an hour, and it was actually 64. Yeah. And that got picked up by the official Twitter of the Ministry of Sport for Kenya. Saying that Wanyama's goal has been clocked at 230
That's good. Just unfortunate.
Do some basic back research.
I think it was actually 64 miles an hour, which is still quite,
pretty quick, isn't it? Yeah. How did you cope with the last 10 minutes from a Liverpool point of view then? So Wanyama was about 70 minutes, wasn't it?
80, I think.
Oh, that late.
Okay. The whole thing.
So then it looked as though, because Spurs had definitely improved second half, and we took control of it without perhaps looking too threatening. I'd say we had that chance through Son, and apart from that, I can't think of Karius making a save. But we were certainly in control. But I mean, how did you feel watching it unravel and then win it and then unravel again?
I thought we were on the ropes. Actually, I thought as much as there maybe there wasn't that many clear cut opportunities, I think Spurs had us on the ropes. I actually think Van Dijk showed that he'd really improved. I think he actually had a really, really good game. I think Lovren did as well until the kick. Although actually, if you watch that back, I've got a feeling he actually gets done by a ridiculous bobble. I think it's the weirdest bounce. I think that's what does it.
Right.
But it seems to keep happening to him.
Yeah, he's a victim of bobbles.
But they were very good because we were repelling, and I was getting to that stage where I was thinking actually we might see this out at 1-0, which is very un-Klopp-like. But yeah, it was pretty emotional. I don't think I've ever lost my mind as much when Salah scored his second without kind of consciously thinking about it. I ended up in the arms of some bloke across the side of the pub. By the time I got back to my chair, I think the penalty had been given
for the second. Such a lonely walk.
His face. Dan's face. Anyway, so
we're in a WhatsApp group, like schoolmates, George and another Liverpool fan are in it. And at Salah's goal, the other one, to be fair, not George.
He always goes too early.
Went big. It was just a load of, like, yes, get him.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't look at my phone until after Kane. And they were still the last messages on there. So I sent my LOL back.
He did the same thing when we were 3-0 up at Sevilla at half time.
Wow.
And I told him off, and I was like, mate, don't say anything. Why have you done it? And then obviously we drew 3-3. So I said, I thought he'd learned his lesson, but he hadn't. But
I mean, that was excusable, wasn't it? Everyone thought that was the winner.
Yeah. Connor, was it you on, speaking of WhatsApp groups, was it you that just put fuck off, fuck off, fuck off, fuck off, why don't we fuck off?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Well, I think it was quite a reasonable reaction, I think. I mean, that could have been to any of the things that happened in the last 10 minutes as well. I think that's what I shouted at Wanyama's goal.
Yeah.
Because it was just that ridiculous. Yes. But it looked all lost, didn't it? And I think it hurt more because knowing how well we'd played, could have won it literally minutes before Kane gone and really fluffed a penalty. Then we go and lose it, and then it was one extreme to the other, wasn't it?
It was. I think I didn't have any reaction whatsoever to the Salah goal, the second one, because I just thought, well, that's obvious. That's obviously going to happen. As soon as Kane misses that penalty, I thought, oh, so Liverpool have got 5 minutes to score. I mean, I was watching it in the flat. I live with a Liverpool fan who absolutely lost his shit. To be fair, I did for Wanyama. I kept my composure for the second goal. Somehow, I don't know why, my head exploded inside, not... But for the Wanyama goal, I mean, I'd had a hangover all day, right, so I'd barely moved. And the Wanyama goal came, and I got up and kicked, you know, like the clothes horses you have?
Yeah.
I just kicked that really hard, and I don't know why. Just sort of in frustration, because we'd been piling on the pressure. And I just sort of sat down and didn't even say anything. I didn't even say anything. Mm. I just sat back down. But, yeah, I mean, there are people on Twitter, I won't name them, who were thinking, oh, we shouldn't really be too happy with that, to be honest. It's only still a point. But I think when you've seen us at Anfield recently, and we'd lost the game. I think everybody knew. I was very close to turning off.
I think it's one of those rare occasions where I think both teams would be happy with it. I think most Liverpool fans that I spoke to seem... I was pleased. Liverpool just needed not lose that game, and at one point it looked like we were going to lose it, which would have been disastrous for you guys to hop in front of us. We wanted to finish that game still in our own hands. To not have that would have been a nightmare. So I think a draw was probably fair.
Yeah, if both teams can come out of it saying we probably should have won that, lads, for various different reasons. Mm. Kane had scored his penalty and not put it down the middle, we probably do go and see that out. If you've got two teams that can say that, and quite legitimately as well, then yeah, a draw is
unusual for us to come away from Anfield thinking, oh, we could have won that.
Mm. Well, the last time was a couple of years ago under Poch as well, I think, wasn't it? That 1-1.
Yes. Yeah.
Very different things. Yeah. It's Dan, you wanted to talk about the wonky diamond that Pochettino employed, so, and maybe Pochettino's tactics overall.
Technical term.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't desperate to talk about it, but it was.
It's worth highlighting. Yeah, it didn't work.
It didn't work first half, no, and I thought it was just a strange one that I struggled to get to grips with. Really, it seemed like Dier was on the right of the diamond, Dembele was at the base. Dele was kind of on the left and Eriksen was on the tip, and it did feel like it just needed to all be swivel about 25 degrees. And obviously Dier had quite a poor game, but particularly bad first half. And I think the fact that he was playing in quite a strange position probably didn't help. Liverpool had a lot of early dominance on the flanks, and I thought Alexander-Arnold just had the run of the right side, didn't he? I mean, Davis had a great game, by the way. It's not a criticism of him, but there was no one really in front of him. It was all very narrow. And Liverpool, if they had got a second goal in the first half, I think it would have been curtains.
They picked a couple of really good passes, Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah, and they came closest from him getting balls into the box, and there was one which I think kind of took a deflection. Yeah,
there was a Milner one in the front.
Yeah, so I think it didn't work, but then obviously... It ended up kind of working because it didn't change in the second half, but Liverpool's press just seemed to slacken. They got a bit tired, and it was really just wave after wave of Spurs attack for the whole second half, albeit without a huge number of chances. I think Son, you know, time is always the enemy of Son, isn't it? You know, he's got time, he's not going to score.
Yeah.
But that was the one big chance before all the late drama.
So there's a lot of criticism of Pochettino in these games, and it's well documented about how his poor record, of Spurs' poor record away at the top six. And this, so with every single passing game that we don't get a win, there's more and more spotlight, or the spotlight's getting brighter, if you like, on Pochettino's tactics. So do you think it worked? And would you say that it was a success overall? Or did you think, you said there that Liverpool tired, Klopp tweaked things, substitutions didn't work, you brought on one.
Yeah, but I think you have to say that overall it did work, because Liverpool basically did to Spurs what Spurs did to Man U on Wednesday, which is get a really early goal, which changes everything. So I think, given the way Spurs played in the second half, and given the way the game went after Salah's first goal, you could probably say that it was quite successful. The problem is, the Spurs shot themselves in the foot right at the beginning, and it just felt like... Learn lessons from what happened last year. You know, keep it tight. Don't do anything stupid for the first 10 minutes. You know, if Sanchez, who had a really bad game, by the way, if Sanchez has to just boot that clear up in the air, then just do it.
And that's what Carrick said at half time, though.
Yeah, and I felt like there was the usual kind of trying to play out from the back against a very aggressive press. And I know that's the Pochettino philosophy, and I've always kind of defended Lloris's right to do that, and you know, Spurs' right to do that. But it did feel naive, is I think the word, and that's the way it's sometimes felt in those away games, the Big Six, especially just in the first 5 minutes, and just gifting them that goal. It's hard to really say after that, you know, whether it worked, but it certainly, when Pochettino had a chance to talk to them and get them in a half time, you know, it was pretty impressive from then on.
What do you think, George, in terms of how Liverpool approached that? Because it was a stark difference between the two halves. And Dan was saying there about playing out from the back, it seemed like every time we tried it in the first half, we made it about two passes into your half and then just got pressed out of it. Second half, we had the whole of our half to play in first. I think Vertonghen was almost on the halfway line. Was that a conscious decision to try and get Salah kind of going through the gears in the second half? Because he's terrorising everyone at the moment.
Yeah.
He's frightening.
I think Jordan Henderson's importance to Liverpool was apparent. I think in the first half he was actually subtly really effective of just hoovering stuff up and getting us on the front foot again. And I think Klopp probably took him off before he started tiring, but I think he would have done because he's not fit yet. And I think you can track, I think the first 10 minutes of the second half, Liverpool weren't actually in trouble at all. It was after that that Spurs kind of got back on it again, and Dele Alli had a really, really great last half an hour. So I think Henderson coming off screwed us a little bit. I think sometimes we look into tactics and what the manager's done too much. I think sometimes players just up their levels. I think Dele Alli just started wandering a little bit more and just upped it basically and started finding his passes, started finding people. And Liverpool, you can't press like Liverpool pressed the first half of the whole game. I think Liverpool fans are often to say, oh, we tire ourselves out and then we can't manage the game for the rest of it. I actually think this was as close as we've got to nearly doing it. Had Wanyama not literally, I don't think he'll score a goal like that again in his career. Had he not done that.
Fairly often.
He scored a long range of performance, but that was ridiculous.
That's quite funny because he tried it at Southampton, didn't he?
Yes, yeah.
And
yeah.
There was some Kane quotes after saying that, like, after Southampton they said never do that
again. Yeah. So I think, yeah, had he not whistled one of the top corner, we could easily have been sitting here with a 1-0. In which case you'd have said, oh, actually Liverpool managed to see it out. So it's fine.
Well, if it was 1-0, you wouldn't be sitting here, mate.
No,
absolutely not a chance.
And you're right about Klopp's subs as well, because I think he brought Matip on for Milner.
Yeah, so a few people have looked at that, but I still think you can't. Matip came on and you scored pretty soon afterwards, but
yeah.
Wanyama thumping one in, it's no.
No, it's true, but I think it did free up the midfield quite a bit compared to when Milner was on.
Maybe I think Milner at the time I was like good, because I think Milner hadn't done anything for about 10 minutes, and I thought maybe he's out. At the time I was like, Wijnaldum's he's played very well against Spurs before. He's seriously physical. I thought this is perfect. Oxlade Chamberlain also came on, didn't it? It was one of those games where the tempo was so high. I think coming on into it was probably quite a hard one. I think Ox or Wijnaldum didn't get going. So it's a difficult one. It's easy to look back and be like, oh, why did the manager do that? But ultimately, very few things would have stopped.
What about Poch's subs?
Well, yeah. They worked out.
Yeah, I mean, he's taken so much stick. And I think before Song came on and got the assist at Newport, it was like over 100 subs, one goal, one assist. Yeah. And that's obviously looking much more favourable now because Song got the assist at Newport, I think, with a flick. Obviously, Wanyama. And then it was Llorente to Lamella for the last penalty. And there has been a lot of criticism of it, and I've said it on this pod, but then I've often felt that he just hasn't really had the personnel on the bench.
Yeah,
like, you know, you can't make game-changing subs if you don't have game-changing players on the bench. And suddenly people are coming back to fitness. I think it's a full squad now in full training. Alderweireld and Rose still weren't considered match fit for the game, but otherwise everyone's with group training. Obviously Moura's come in. The bench is starting to look very, very strong, or stronger than it probably has at any point under Pochettino. And assuming Alderweireld and Rose come through Newport, then there's going to be some decent players not in the 18 against Arsenal. And that is going to make a difference. I still think he can be too reluctant to make subs, but when you've actually got decent players on there, it's going to be easier, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I suppose it's kind of testament to how much happened in the game that we haven't even spoken about Harry Kane yet. 100 Premier League goals. There was an article in Players Tribune today. It was like self-penned, wasn't it? Or is it?
Yeah, the Players Tribune is all like self-penned.
Okay.
So it's just players writing features about
himself and their
career. I found
it almost like a love letter to himself, but not in a self-indulgent way, just a kind of fucking well done, because he goes right the way back to the start of his career and say, or start of his, you know,
yeah, career. I mean, really, yeah. Well, I mean, that's how early careers start, though, isn't it?
Well, I suppose, yeah, and getting dropped by Arsenal and then kind of feeding off that and going to, he's talked about Millwall, doesn't he, and Leyton Orient. Leicester, which was unsuccessful, and then AVB. So he's a real, he just goes through it as a
timeline. Yeah, I think it was all stuff he's touched on before, but just a lot more detail, a lot more passion. Mm. It was a really good read for anyone who's not read it. You'll find it on the Players Tribune website.
I like the bit about AVB, where AVB called him in and said, right, we're going to send you out on loan again, and he said, no.
Mm.
It just didn't go.
Yeah, and I think my biggest takeaway from it was nothing new. It was just that Kane's best quality is just in his head. It's his mentality. He is just a freak in that regard.
Mm.
He's just such a good professional, and he's always striving to get better. He'll never really rest. He'll just keep trying to get better and better and better. And that came across throughout the article, and you could tell that even as a kind of 8-year-old, he was like, well, I'm going to prove you wrong. And it's just like constantly, you know, anyone who calls him a 1-2s in one day goes to prove him wrong. Releases an 8-year-old. He's now spending the rest of his career trying to prove Arsenal wrong.
Yeah.
It's like, basically, do not doubt Harry Kane because it'll end up badly for you.
Yeah, and even at the end, he touched on the, I've got dreams of winning the title with all of my mates. Talked about Pochettino, how close a relationship they've got, which they don't really, you know it's true because you see it, and how can they not be? They're kind of, they're a success story of each other in a way, but he's so candid and honest to say, like, you know, we're close mates, he's one of my best friends.
A bit, yeah, a bit like what Pochettino called him into his office after one of the games. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what, because he said it was
he said I've just scored a hat trick, so it could have been one of many, many games.
I think it's his first hat trick, he said, which is Leicester.
Is it Leicester one, yeah?
Yeah, okay. The one that was like two deflections, two of them were going wide, and one was a penalty. Yeah. Yeah. Which is, you know, early doors Harry Kane hat trick, but. It was great to see. If you haven't seen it, then have a look at it for it. I think it's on the Tottenham Way Twitter feed anyway. Before we move on, we said that Dyer had a bad game, and we mentioned Henderson's influence, or fading influence, before he went off because he's not fit. So in light of the World Cup coming up in a few months, who's winning that race, do you think, to start in centre mid, or are they both running the exact same race and going to start together because Gareth Southgate can't put a team together?
I think Southgate... Every fan will want Southgate to play one of them, not two, and play someone a bit more creative. I think he'll bottle it. He'll play both. I'd be shocked if it's not Dyer Henderson in the middle. If I was going to pick one, if we were going to play,
let me guess.
No. I was about to say, this is going to surprise you. If we play 3-4-3, which it seems like it's going to, then regardless of the rest of the season, I'd still play Dyer. I think he's more able to play that system. He's more used to it. He's more able to obviously drop into the three if a Stones or a Maguire wants to go forward, and I think England were crying out for more. We played the last game, didn't we? I think England, we've been asking for ages for a more flexible, advanced, modern football team. So I'd play Dyer actually if it's a 3-4-3. But if he plays like he did yesterday for the rest of the season, then he might.
I think long term, Southgate plans to use Dyer in the middle of a back three anyway. So I'm not sure if it'll become that much of an issue. I can remember us having one of the stories in the paper. That's where he sees Dyer, and he plans to build the team around him starting there. So
he'll be delighted.
We could be seeing them both on the pitch, but not in the position.
Only for three games, so it'd be fine. Need to do any further than that. Dan, are you going to say Dyer as well?
Yeah, that's interesting what Con says. I didn't see that story. I do wonder about Dyer. I mean, he is getting. Not so much to his peak, because I think he's still
24,
something like that. But I just wonder how long he can go on flipping between the two positions. And I do think he's got a slight problem in that he's probably the second or third ranked holding midfielder at Spurs, given that Dembele played holding midfielder, at least for now. And I think Wanyama at the top of his game fit is slightly better there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's certainly at least the third ranked centre back behind Alderweireld and Vertonghen. So it's quite, but at the same time he feels kind of crucial because he can do both positions and because he's such a Pochettino man. But I do wonder whether and that it was sort of touched upon in Pochettino's book a bit, you know, whether he just wants to find one position. I think he sees himself as a midfielder, and just really how long it can go on with him being the kind of Mr. Fix-It that sort of plugs the gap wherever it is.
There's two areas where we get the most injuries, centre mid and centre back, isn't it?
But and, he's so useful, and I'm not doubting that at all. Or just, you know, particularly for his England ambitions, if, for instance, Southgate wants to play him in a back three and he spent the whole year in and out of Spurs midfield, you know, is that really going to work at a World Cup? Yeah. But, I mean, I think I would have him... I quite like Jordan Henderson, actually, but I think I would probably have Dier, as George said, because he has that flexibility to kind of drop and form a back three if there's one, you know, if we're not playing one, just drop anyway and do a defender's job as well as a midfielder's job.
Fair enough. I hate Jordan Henderson. I think he's utter toilet.
He's
underrated.
No, that's
he's
joking.
He's
wrong.
I'm joking. Livermore is going to go to the World Cup.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it pains me to say it, but I think, you know, Wilshire, if he carries on playing okay, just because he can keep the ball, should probably go. I really hope Winks gets fit quickly, because he was looking like a shoo-in a few months ago.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that he's got hurt. And there's only a surprisingly few league games left now. There's only 12 league games,
12 left.
Which
crazy.
Seems kind of shocking. But I hope Winks gets back to the way he's playing against Real Madrid in November, because he deserves... Well, not that he deserves to go, but it'd be great if he did go, because he can keep the ball as well.
Yeah.
And basically, we don't want Dyan Henderson in the midfield, because we're not going to lose the ball over and over again.
Yeah. Mentioned Winks there. You've also mentioned the fact that the squad's getting a bit more competitive, a few more players coming back. Got Newport midweek. Most likely going to see quite a heavily rotated team, but not quite as weak as it was away at Newport. Is that fair to say, do you think?
I think so. I'm not sure if we're going to see Kane again. I mean, he does seem to like playing against Wimbledon as well, didn't he? But I'd hope if he plays Kane again, he doesn't start Llorente as well, because it doesn't really seem to work.
No, but so around, say, I think Kane asks to play these games.
Yeah.
He almost certainly knocks on the door and says, play me. Yeah. And if he's fit, then Poch probably doesn't have much reason to say no. But Lamella needs minutes, Wanyama still needs minutes, Winks hasn't played since December. Man City,
Moore for the first time.
No, he can't play.
I
got it wrong on last week's pod, actually. Apologies to the listeners. If he's not registered before the first original game, he can't play.
But yeah, so Toby needs minutes, Rose needs minutes. Looking at a lot of players that do. And Sanchez came off early as well against Liverpool, so he's a chance that he could play as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously 3 days before Arsenal, so I'm kind of with Con, I wouldn't be against Kane not starting that. You think Llorente, I mean, he's been poor, but actually, I think literally had one touch against Liverpool, and it was a very, very important touch. Mm. So, I mean, come on, it is Newport at Wembley, and I know they did a number on Spurs on that terrible pitch at home, but I think they've already made something like 800k just from getting the replay. It's kind of job done for them, and you just kind of, you'd imagine that Spurs could play. Or could not play Kane, rather, and still win that game.
Newport fresh off the back of a 2-0 defeat at Colchester this weekend as well. So.
Good research, mate.
Yeah.
Well played. Is that through the mirror connections? Did you?
ITK.
Yeah.
I haven't had it confirmed yet. But,
yeah. Yeah, I've no idea what we're likely to do, but there's plenty of players that need minutes.
There's enough players, yeah.
It's quite exciting in a way.
Walker Peters needs to get his confidence back after being hooked at half-time at Newport, so it would be good if he played. And it would be good if some other young players played. I don't know who, but I think Oakley Booth was nearly on the bench at Newport. Then they made a late change and put Amos on the bench.
Okay.
He's now gone on loan, but Oakley Booth...
You think nearly on the bench at Newport's going to be on the CV?
Yeah.
It was weird. They sort of named the bench with him on it, and then they deleted his tweet straight away. Okay. Obviously, you can't do that because some bizarre weirdos had screenshotted the original tweet. just in case this changes. He might be on the bench again.
Fair enough. I don't think we've got much more to say on Newport, but we've got the North London Derby early Saturdays, 12:30, isn't it? 12:30 kickoff.
Yeah.
Huge. Absolutely massive. Do you think it's as big as it was last season? That was obviously April, and there was a chance to that was the game, wasn't it, to finish above them. But it's, things were a bit more settled then. I think we knew we were getting top four. But it's
The last season it was to finish above them. It was massive. I mean, it doesn't quite feel like Spurs could secure that with a win, but it would be, I think it would widen the gap to something like 7 or 8 points.
Seven.
So it would be, I mean, well, like pre-Pochettino Spurs have blown bigger leads over Arsenal, but it would feel like a big, big step to win there. And I think in the bigger picture, before this run of United, Liverpool, Arsenal, if any Spurs fan had been offered 7 points, they'd have taken it.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it would have been I think people might have looked at it and said 5 is a decent return, given the form United were in. So I think, yeah, a win would just cap off a really difficult run of games nicely, assuming Newport goes okay, and yeah, it would be big.
We've got fourth best home record in Premier League. Arsenal have only won 3 games away from home all season. They've got 13 points away from home all season. It is pretty poor, but of course things look very different for Arsenal now. They're kind of at the turn of the year and everything changed and Sanchez went and they've gone and spent that money reasonably sensibly by looks of things on first glance, certainly at the weekend. Concerned? I mean, any more concerned than you normally would be going into a game against Arsenal?
I honestly don't think I'm any more concerned than I would be if they still had Sanchez and they didn't have Aubameyang or Mkhitaryan. I know Arsenal fans weren't happy with him this season, but he still won 3 or 4 games on his own, even if he was putting in 50%. I think he's as dangerous as anybody on his day. I don't think we're going up against anything we don't really know about. I mean, we've already faced Mkhitaryan this season and Aubameyang twice. I just think we're a completely different animal at home, as you already mentioned. I mean, I was worried about Sanchez and Martial up against our fullbacks in the United game. You know, same with Ronaldo and Isco, whoever at Real Madrid. But as long as we just keep up the tempo that we do at home and don't let them play, then it shouldn't be anything to worry about.
Yeah, we've spoken quite a lot about Arsenal's window and saying how they've still got that defence, they've still got that midfield, it's so porous. And that's where we excel, really, obviously. And you look at the fact that we've got a better defence as well. It seems like almost a simple 2+2=4 equation, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, I know what Con's saying, but I also think like it sort of feels like Arsenal's team spirit is already better now that Sanchez is gone. By the sounds of it, like, he was such a prick and everyone hated him. I think in that respect, like, Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan coming in has kind of lifted everyone and probably united the squad and given them a bit of a buzz. So I think, yeah, in that respect, they are going to look quite tasty going forward, I think. But I think, as I said on the pod last week, I don't even think it was that sensible a window, because they desperately needed to buy defenders, possibly even a goalkeeper, because Cech is really declining fast, and a holding midfielder, and they haven't done any of those things. So, yeah, I agree with Connor. I think if Spurs play with the kind of start as quickly as this, well, not as quickly, because that's was literally nearly a record, but if they start quickly like they did against United, play with the high intensity, I just don't think Arsenal are going to have enough to cope with them.
Do you think this kickoff's going to be a thing from now on? Because we tried to do exactly the same at the start of the second half at Liverpool.
Did we?
The long ball.
Yeah,
didn't spot that.
It was genuinely
at the beginning of the second half.
Kane raced forward, back to Vertonghen, long ball to Kane, but it didn't come off the same.
Yeah, also. I think why not? Did it? We said on last week's pod, Michael Cox did a piece about kickoffs on ESPN a while ago that I was slightly disdainful of at the time, but it was about, you know, why don't teams do more set moves, essentially, was the message. And if this works once, it could work again, so why not?
I feel like Wanyama, though, isn't it? Like, everyone's now aware of it. It's not going to... It's just like one of those freakish things.
Yeah, but essentially, it's just a long ball, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just a good opportunity, a time when you know you're going to have the ball and everyone's going to be in a certain place.
Yeah.
And
you're
under limited pressure just to poof.
Imagine that, 11 seconds against Arsenal. Imagine the limbs behind that. George, looking at this fixture, we're obviously 2 points behind you at the moment, 2 points behind Chelsea, who are playing tonight.
One behind Chelsea.
Are we?
We're one. Oh, no, you're one behind Chelsea, we're one in front. That's it, yeah.
Yes. So is this one of those fixtures you look at for Spurs? Because we're the chasing pack now, it looks like. is there a good result that can come out of that?
I think it's probably still a draw. I think if Arsenal went and beat you, then all of a sudden I'd be like, oh, actually maybe Arsenal could claw it back. So I think a draw would be... I think Spurs will win. I think I'm kind of praying that Arsene Wenger has a bit of humility and plays... I think he played Mkhitaryan. He played basically all his attacking four at the week when they're at home, obviously. I think he'll do the same thing again and get torn apart at Spurs. I really hope he goes for like a more compact three and then plays with three of his attacking players and actually gives themselves a chance. Because then I think they could trouble you. I don't think it'll be easy. I've got this gut feeling that they might make it a bit trickier for you than everyone makes out. It wouldn't surprise me if they...
I don't think it'll be an easy game.
Yeah.
It never is. Like, it's... I can't... Maybe the North London Derby Waha Lane last season was the kind of most routine win over them I can remember for a long time. But it's very... Because it's such a competitive derby and there's so much on it, I can't see it being really, really one-sided.
Mm. I think we made this mistake in the away game, the one at the Emirates earlier this season. I know that Ali and Kane, neither of them were fit, were they? They both got subbed well before the end.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think that there was a bit of complacency amongst a lot of Spurs fans there, thinking that we're just on the up and this is just the next natural step that we're going to take. We're going to go there and we're going to absolutely batter them. And then we really didn't turn up on the day. Would you like that to be in our minds a little bit as a Spurs fan? Do you want us to have that in our heads and think, you know, we've got to show what we can do a little bit? Because it seemed to be a little bit of that against United.
Yeah, I don't think that the players have that in their minds as much as us, to be honest. I mean, I went on a podcast a week before the North London Derby and predicted, I think, a 3-0 win with the Kane.
Yeah, that's right, you did, yeah.
Yeah, also called them franchise scum. but I think we're a highly professional team, and I don't think we're going to have that in our heads as much as the fans might. I think this is a game, as we touched on with Kane, that what he spoke about in the article, this is the game for him. He's going to be as up for this as he would anything. And I don't think we're going to take anything for granted, especially after what happened at the Emirates.
Yeah, I mean, he was as frustrated as anyone, I imagine, at the Emirates. So I'm going to disagree slightly there. I do think it might actually be in Kane's head, maybe even more than fans a little bit. Like, we can forget that because we have to. You lose to your rivals, you put that under your bed and don't look in that box again. But I think Kane's going to feel, particularly being subbed off, he wasn't fit, don't even think he had a chance in the game, then we could see a bit of a red rag Harry Kane, couldn't we, I suppose. Dan, how do you see it going? What are your thoughts? Come on, mate.
I'm terrible at predictions.
I know.
Or any kind of match previewing is not my forte.
It's difficult, isn't it?
It is difficult. If Wenger goes Iwobi, Mkhitaryan, Aubameyang, Ozil, you'll beat them. I think he will. If he plays it a bit more pragmatic and throws a few surprises, it wouldn't surprise me if they got a draw, but I just don't think he's going to have the humility to change how they play. He's not done it for the last 20 years.
So. I know he's got many blind spots, but I think Iwobi's quite a good one as well. Mm. I haven't seen him do anything that isn't shit yet.
When he first broke through, he had he was really good. Alex Ferguson said something in an interview about how he's like, this Iwobi's going to be amazing, and then since then you can apply this to a lot of Wenger. Young players, who doesn't help. He looks like he's stalled the last couple of years. But when he broke through, I thought he was going to be.
I'm not really sure what they need in this system. I almost think the only reason Walcott wasn't playing is because they changed their system. Now they're going back to this with a wide forward. I think Walcott would be more suited to this than Iwobi, to be honest. I think it'd be more.
He's the one who should drop. They should play three in midfield with probably Wilshere, who'd be up for it, Ramsey and Xhaka or whatever. It'll make it a bit harder for you.
I think from a Spurs perspective, it does just feel like everyone's potentially out of Elden Road to come back at Newport. It could potentially be the first time this whole season, I think, given that Wanyama and Lamela missed so much of it, the Poch has a full squad to choose from. His team will be really interesting. There are no excuses, really. Wembley form's not a problem anymore. Won most of the big games at Wembley, or in fact, all of the big games at Wembley since Chelsea. Yeah, so... It does feel like it's looking like Spurs' game, you know. But I'm cautious.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic.
George, we asked for questions on the Twitter feed on Tottenham Way Twitter earlier, and there wasn't many that were mugging you off.
Yeah, I saw a bit of action on that.
Yeah, in some way. People have long memories, I think.
People hate you. Like, a lot.
It was
you can let me talk about it first. You can let me talk about
let him talk about it.
Let me ask you a question first, because this is something that Spurs fans have had to deal with quite a lot. And so, if Liverpool don't win a trophy this season, Klopp, Salah, Mane, Firmino, are they going to leave to find success? You've seen Coutinho leave already, and that's been long mooted as well. That went back to the summer, possibly even longer than that. But it seems as if Spurs do get a little bit of a raw deal when it comes to the way that the media treat our players and our manager. As soon as we start to get a little bit of success or relative success, it feels like we're being auctioned off a little bit. Never really seems to happen with Liverpool so much. So,
I wouldn't say that about the player. I think Liverpool's players are as linked away as Spurs is. The only difference is that Liverpool's players have ended up going. That's the only reason why maybe the media have stopped talking about.
So, are you looking at Suarez, Coutinho?
Yeah. I think Liverpool's players have hit a certain level where it's made the big guys come in, and I think Spurs have been fortunate till about that. Now, I'd be shocked if no one put a bid in for Kane, or at least put a bit of pressure on this summer. I think up till now it's been kind of avoidable, or people like Ali and Eriksen maybe have not individually burned so brightly that a big club's come in. It's worrying, and it's an ongoing thing, isn't it? I don't think this summer Salah's in danger of going, but if it was another year after that of no trophy, maybe then he'd be like, oh God, I've hit this level, and maybe the club's not allowing me to go to the next level. Klopp, I think, is in it for, he has 7 years, 7 year at Man, 7 year at Dortmund. I think he's in it for, I've got no worries about Klopp. It's a concern, obviously. I think Liverpool won't lose anyone in the summer. I saw the question coming on Twitter. I think it probably applies more to Spurs if they don't win something this summer, because I think Spurs talk, you know, when you speak about Cage around being a winner and wanting to get better and better and better. I know he loves playing for Spurs, but for someone who's so hyper driven to succeed, I think it's inevitable that he'll get to a point when he's like, well, actually, I've still got no medals in my cabinet, I've got lots of match balls, but if I did go somewhere else, I could be the best striker on the planet and start hoovering up Champions Leagues. And I think Pochettino is going to be top of a lot of lists for the big clubs if they sack managers. I think Zidane's going to obviously go, I think, probably this year. PSG always seems to want to change their manager. So I think both clubs, until they start winning things and competing and getting Champions League finals, will always be at risk of losing their best players.
Dan, agree? Which bit?
Just
the interesting thing that I got out of that was that if Klopp, or you're saying that there's no danger of Klopp and stuff, it's almost as if there's a different ceiling there, or rather, so if Klopp does the exact same thing as Pochettino with Liverpool, doesn't win anything but gets top four and maybe a quarter final or semi final of Champions League, for Spurs that would be us saying like, well, we're in danger of losing him because he's done so well with us. But I don't think there's any chance of that happening with Klopp and Liverpool. Nobody would be going, well, Klopp got Liverpool to the semi final of Champions League, he's got to be Real Madrid's next manager. Do you see what I mean? Yeah, I do see what you mean. I'll do what I always do when I get asked a difficult question. I'll defer to Pochettino quotes. I mean, he did say in the build-up to the game, which I thought was quite interesting, he made a real point at the press conference of saying, someone said, are Spurs and Liverpool similar? You know, can you compare them? And he made a real point of going on quite a big rant about how it's really not fair, it's still not fair to compare Spurs and Liverpool because obviously the wages there's such a big difference in wages and transfer fees too. I mean, obviously the Van Dijk thing was offset by Coutinho leaving, but still, I don't think Spurs are ever going to be buying a 75 million centre back. At least they won't be buying a 75 million centre back, no matter who leaves, until the new stadium's kind of up and established. So there is still a difference between the two clubs. I think interesting from what George just said there about you feel like Liverpool players get linked away more than Spurs players. And I think any Spurs fan would say Spurs players get linked away more than Liverpool players, which shows that you pay attention to your club more. I kind of feel like, from keeping an eye on Spurs, there's still a slight narrative of selling club. And I think the best example of that was actually the Real Madrid away game, when the whole game got billed as a Kane auditioned for Real.
Yeah.
Which I did think was really strange. I mean, obviously...
It was exactly the same with Bale back in 2011.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to always kind of defend... I don't think the media are susceptible to narratives, really. And I think the media, football media, is so diverse and so varied, and there's just so many good people doing it, that if there is a lazy narrative that appears, it will quickly get shot down. And there'll quickly be other opinions. But that actually was an example where I thought there's a lot of people, and I think it came from Spain, but I thought there's a lot of people saying this is Kane's Real audition. And I still wonder whether, you know, whether a player at Liverpool in the same position would have been subjected to the same kind of pre-match narrative. I mean, obviously, if it had been Barcelona and Coutinho, he would have done. But say, like, a homegrown Liverpool player, whether a big game would have been billed as their farewell. So I do think, but then, you know, Spurs have to prove they're not a selling club, and they haven't. Sorry to say that they haven't actually done that yet. I mean, they handled the Kyle Walker thing very well, and the message was very much he was a player Poch wanted to sell and was happy to sell and rebuild around. But it was still a player who ultimately left after a bigger club, or a richer club in this case, came in. And until there's serious interest in Kane, Ali, Eriksen, Alderweireld, and they stay, then you can't say that Spurs' DNA has changed. You know,
there's only so Liverpool have changed. There's only so long you can keep a player if they themselves aren't 100% in it. You can keep them maybe for 12 months.
Yeah, that's it.
They're only going to want to stay.
Yeah, so the key thing is keeping them happy and showing them you can win stuff.
And the really bad, really, really the top players, which Kane obviously is, after a certain period of time, I'm not saying it'll be this summer, I think maybe you've probably got, but when he gets to like 27, 28 maybe, at best, you still haven't won anything, I can see why he'd go and ask to leave, and I think Spurs would struggle to be like, no, you've definitely got to stay if he was like...
Yeah, and I think Kane himself is actually on record saying, I don't see the point in keeping a player unhappy. So he's obviously very much of that mindset. But then again, I would also say that there's a reason that Pochettino keeps mentioning Totti where Kane's concerned, because Totti's an example of a world-class player who stayed at one club and didn't win that many trophies. I think he won one Serie A. And obviously Pochettino thinks Kane is of a similar character, and it maybe is a slightly unique player in that regard. He does seem... The Players' Tribune article was kind of further confirmation that he does seem to have quite a... Yeah, it's just a special connection with the club.
I think, yeah, definitely in that last paragraph when he talked about, you know, he dreams of lifting the Premier League trophy in the new stadium with his mates. I think he touched on Totti there, winning one Serie A. I think Totti winning a Serie A with Roma would mean a lot more to him than winning three Champions League at Juve or four Serie A's. I think that's similar with Kane, to be honest. I think he knows that he will be able to take the easy way out, in air quotes, by going to Real Madrid and winning the Champions League a couple of times, but I don't think that would mean anywhere near as much to him as doing something similar with Tottenham.
There are Gerrard parallels, obviously, but I think
Gerrard thought that. Kane's a much better player.
But let's not devalue the podcast. I think, but then... Gerrard won the Champions League in
the season he
right
was
in the midst
go.
Of his... Yeah. When he was 24, 25, 26, Liverpool were winning...
That summer was, I'm not going to sign a contract, I'm off to Chelsea.
Yeah,
it was
2005,
and then the Champions League came at the most. I mean, it's never a bad time to win a Champions League, but in the terms of the legacy that he went on and left.
And then even the last chance he had to really leave was, I think, when he was about 28, and we tailed off a little bit under Benitez, but then we had that season when we nearly won it against United. I think that probably convinced him, I could still win the Premier League here, it would mean more to me. So I think there was always that carrot and stick. He always thought that maybe we were going to get to that level, and I wonder if...
Wasn't he bullied into staying by local thugs?
That was rude, wasn't it? Or was it both?
Yeah, come on, mate. It's starting to get a bit sloppy now.
I think it was Gerrard.
Put the pressure on.
Finished fifth this season, didn't have Champions League football next year. That's a whole 12 months of Kane sitting there thinking...
He's already said he wants to play in the new stadium.
Yeah.
If after that season we come,
you in the next season, you in the new stadium next season, aren't you?
Yeah.
He'll have a year playing there without being in the Champions League. So.
Well, yeah.
It would weigh on his mind. I think he's a hyper competitive person. So
feels like you're maybe lashing out a little bit here, George. Do you have something to
no,
say?
No.
Is there anything you want to say about your first appearance? Do you feel like it was a fair reflection?
I think I know a lot of people for us maybe being a bit bitter, and obviously we just got battered 4-1. But I think my points have probably been justified since. I think after that game, Liverpool were 7 points behind Spurs, and here I sit with 2 points in front. It's a pretty substantial swing. And my points after that game were that I think the mood amongst you guys and amongst the Spurs fans was that Spurs were going to be the challengers to City then at that point. Mm. And obviously City may have been better than any of us thought they were going to be, but Spurs definitely haven't been the challengers to City. And I said that Liverpool game shouldn't be proof that that's going to be the case because Liverpool were that bad. And I think, I'd struggle to find anyone arguing against it, that that's rung out because I don't think Spurs have proven themselves to be that good this season.
I think it was more the specific Lovren points that you made on the...
I think it was more the fact that you were determined to give Spurs no credit whatsoever. Yeah. That's what I felt. And it would be I really wanted you to praise Salah. I was waiting for it because I was just going to step in and say, oh, but you can't say anything because Spurs are so bad at the back and he got gifted two goals.
I know you too well, mate. I'm not going to give it...
But I think that's what it felt like.
I said then, you won't play a worse team in 90 minutes than Liverpool that game. I don't
but,
think
but then, the, but then I think
they were so bad.
You know, we're going to end up having the same podcast again now. But then I think, you know, it's like what irritated me about the United game, and I said it to Tom on the last podcast, was every media outlet, including my own, went with, you know, how bad United, you know, cheese grater midfield, Pogba not working, and all this stuff, and it's quite frustrating because you think, well, you know, were they bad, or were they made to look bad by a very, very good Spurs team? And you can pose the same question, you know, did Spurs just make Liverpool look terrible?
No, I get you.
By playing very well,
I thought,
you know,
Spurs were just way better than United last year. I agree with you there. I think Spurs were just actually really good. I do think the reverse, obviously Spurs were awful, I'm not saying, and if you listen to the last podcast, I never said that, but I do think that Liverpool was so bad.
Never said Spurs were awful after the fall.
I think Liverpool were so bad, and I think it's been, if Spurs were as good as they were made to look in that game, they wouldn't be sitting here, they wouldn't be fifth now. They wouldn't have got ditched out of the League Cup 3 days later against West Ham.
I think, how do you remember that? Like, obsessed. Well, judging by Twitter in the last 24 hours after that game, there is nothing football fans like more than a rival being incredibly salty. So people having a go at that original podcast, that first podcast you were on, actually really surprised me because I just thought, people are going to love this. People are going to really enjoy the fact that you just couldn't get it through.
I was an easy target, but I think we
have to say he's made some fair points. But then, I mean, it's a very long discussion about why Spurs are fifth, which kind of includes basically not playing at home. I think on the basis of that performance, they deserve more credit than you gave, but that's ancient history.
Fair enough. Connor, do you have anything at all to add? Would you like to neutralise all of this?
Not necessarily on Liverpool, but I did hear something very good about a former player who I'm not sure many Spurs fans will remember. I just heard this on the Saturday Football Show, so I'll listen to this. Do you remember Yuri Berchich?
Yes.
Berchich?
Yeah. Yuri Berchich.
Yeah. So
what era is that?
Oh, this is Juan de Ramos.
So he never played.
No.
It's like a rogue left back who never played.
Yeah, basically.
I do not have it. I'm usually really nerdy about this sort of stuff.
No, basically. No. So
okay, go on.
We brought him in under Ramos. So basically, the only reason I'm talking about this is because he scored for PSG this weekend.
Oh, okay.
And he's apparently quite good at his job, which I don't think we realised. But I googled him because I thought I recognised that name. So I googled him, and he never played for us because we sent him out on loan to, I think it was Cheltenham.
Cheltenham Town, yeah.
Yeah, and in his first appearance for them, he almost broke Lansbury's leg in half, who was on loan from Arsenal at the time. Didn't get a red card for it, but it was so bad that his own manager made him come off the pitch.
Wow.
Martin Allen, I think that was.
Martin Allen as well, of all the people to do.
It was such a bad tackle. Mad dog himself. I thought that was quite funny.
On the subject of random foreign players who never got a minute, what George will quite like is when Spurs got Arnesen in for the first time, and it was Arnesen and Santini, right?
Yeah.
And Yol, obviously, as assistant manager. And we were at school at the time.
You were very excited.
Spurs had been terrible, obviously, for a long time. Yeah. and it had been very depressing, and I'd been at school with these Liverpool fans who'd had a lot of success, and everyone was either in our... I didn't know many Spurs fans at school, everyone was either Arsenal...
It was a lonely time, wasn't it?
And I remember Frank Arnesen came, and I read all the interviews with him. He did all the research, and he had uncovered Ronaldo, uncovered all these players. And we started signing players like Space Delevski, Rodrigo Defendi, and Munir El Hamdou. And I proudly told Baggers that we had got the new Ronaldo.
I feared Space Delevski. I really feared him. I thought he was going to be there.
But I was like, yeah, we've got the new Beckham, this guy Space Delevski. We've got the new we've got the new Cannavaro, Rodrigo Defendi.
I'm sure El Hamdan was having cancer. I'm sure he went on to be not terrible in that.
Yeah, he went on to be not terrible. He's also got the best ever Spurs assist in a pre-season friendly for Robbie Keane. We basically got a first time pass and did a kind of weird back heel step over, roll, flick, pass to Keane, which is unbelievable.
Did you mean it?
It was in like the Peace Cup.
Right, okay. Good. The glory days, as we call them. That was actually quite a nice ending to the pod. That's a bit,
very much
sort of retro and a bit hipster and a bit
depressing.
A little bit.
Good memories of when Spurs were generally awful, and you're not now.
Yes, not for us. George, thank you very much for coming down. You've been reasonably impartial, and I think that you deserve credit for that.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Not at all. Connor, thank you very much for coming down.
No worries.
Dan, nice to see you. Thank you for use of your flat and for the Haribo.
You're welcome on both fronts.
See you next week for a North London Derby review.
Woo!
Just going to make it up.